Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Shit Show with J-Bo. How is everybody doing out there in podcast land? Where are you? Are you in your car listening to this? Are you at a restaurant? Are you in your house? The beautiful thing about podcasting that I try to impress upon people is, other than it's just such a quickly spread around the globe medium. Other than that, it's just, you can do anything you want while listening to a podcast, as long as your employers are okay, as long as, you know, the cops, you know, some states you can only wear one headphone in. That's kind of funny. I've been busted for that, actually. I actually lost my license over that once. I lost my license. I was probably listening to a podcast, and a cop drove by, gave me a ticket in California, and it just slipped my mind. It was like a $35 ticket wearing headphones while driving. He told me you could only have one on. So I've actually been pulled over since then for the same thing. Not so much pulled over, but a cop was in the road like directing traffic, and he said something about my headphones, and I said, "Hey man, I only have one in," which was a lie. I just pulled one out, but he couldn't say anything. He said something like, "Well, it didn't look like it, but okay, man." So that's the deal. If you see a cop, just take one headphone out, one earbud. They say it's dangerous to drive with earbuds in, but I've never had an issue. I hopefully will never have an issue. I've done some straight up crazy, crazy podcast listening, you know, like driving a moped. I mean, St. Augustine 32084, and just blasting something, you know, probably just, I don't know, maybe some music that's great to drive by, maybe some Alex Jones, and he's kind of like my oral coffee, you know. I wake up in the morning and I put him on. I don't know why, it's the agitation in his voice. I don't know if it's my personality going against its type, because I'm not really a brash, you know, guy that does that type of thing, but I really enjoy that dude. I mean, I don't even really listen to half the stuff he says. You know what I mean? Like, I don't mind what he says all the time. It's just more the tone. It's just his passion. And it's his energy flowing through the radio. So I enjoy it. That's my morning coffee. Plus, I drink a lot of coffee. We've gone over that. If you're a regular listener to the show, I love me some coffee. I wear it like a badge of honor when I spill coffee on myself. It's like, no, you leave that there, man. You leave that coffee on your lapel, on your collar, on your pants, all around the crotch area. You leave that coffee, because you know what? You're a hip motherfucker, and you're drinking it, and you're loving it, and you're caffeinated, and you're a thinking person, and all that. You know, you leave it there. It's what God intended. It's natural. I'll tell you that when I used to go into the rainforest with my buddy Perry. Oh my God. The rainforest, there's a rainforest near Seattle about 2 hours away, and it's the Olympic National Rainforest, I believe. And I've had some magical moments there. About two or three times that I've gone there, I was doing some acid, and I just remember there's so much green. It just looked like the green was just dripping into each other, you know? And it was so magical and so wet. And the reason why I bring up the leaving the coffee on your shirt where it falls as a badge of honor, in a sense, me and my buddy Perry, so we went to the rainforest this one time, and we took some acid. My buddy Jason Lewis took a piece of acid about as big as his thumb, and he put it in his mouth. He's like, and put it on his tongue. And I remember thinking, that dude's totally insane. I've never seen anybody eat that much acid. It was so intense looking. And he was okay. Like myself, I always had a heavy trip with acid. But that dude, I don't know what it was, but he brought me out of a couple acid trips, you know, like led me out of the forest when I was ready to straight up Well, it's a different time in a different forest with a different acid. But he led me out of a forest one time when I was, it was like 9 o'clock at night. The sun had just gone down and I had no idea where to go. And I just was ready to sit down. My big plan was to sit down in a forest and wait for the sun to come up, because that seemed like the safest thing. Can you imagine? It would have been from 9, you know, 10, 11, 12, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, you know, 9 or 10 hours till the sun came up. Totally insane. But anyway, getting back to the story, you leave things as you found them. Me, Perry, and Jason would be cruising through, walking through the forest and these trails. And Perry was from Colorado. And if you've ever known anybody from Colorado, they tend to be quite outdoorsy and they love, you know, mountaineering boots and mountaineering and just hiking. It's a very, you know, crunchy granola type place. In fact, it seems like a cool joint, man. It seems like a cool state. I like that area. I like northern New Mexico as well. You know, maybe that's where I'm destined, because I've been thinking about New Mexico a lot. I don't know. I really like the mountains and I really like to, you know, walk around in them. But anyway, Perry would always emphasize when we were walking these trails, you'd come to this mud puddle sometimes. And everybody's inclination, and this kind of stuck with me my whole life, and I'll pass it to you and you probably won't ever forget it. But when you come up on a mud puddle on a trail, no matter how big it is, you walk through that mud puddle. You walk through it. You don't walk around it. You don't make the mud puddle worse. You don't make the path where people have just walked. Because what happens is everybody walks around. Before you know it, it destroys the trail, right? Because you know, the mud puddle is going to extend a little bit past the trail, a foot or two. The more you walk around it, it's going to extend into the areas. And you want to keep it untouched and you want to keep it beautiful. But we were all tripping and we were walking through this path. And Perry just said, "No, you stay in the middle of that trail." And I remember being like, abso-fucking-lutely, we're going to stay in the middle of that trail. That's amazing. And we stayed in the middle, and always. Okay, to be honest, I don't always walk right through the middle of the trail. But what I might do is I might jump over the trail. But certainly, I'm sure I've done it. But now that I speak of it, I'm going to try to stay in the middle of the trail. Which is all about preparation, right? Like, it's really easy to stay in the middle of the trail and the middle of the mud puddle if you have the proper foot attire. Which leads me to my last job before my current job. I grow pot right now. I'm actually technically a grower of medical cannabis. And it's very interesting. Tomorrow we're putting the plants up and I will see them through. They're about a month old and I will see them through for about 2 more months. And then we harvest them. And then who knows what happens after that. But it's all about the lights, the humidity, the nutrients, pruning, undercutting, trellising, scrogging, monster cropping, all this crazy stuff. There's a lot to it, man. You can't let them grow dicks. If they get too stressed out or if the genetics are bad, they will actually grow tiny penises. They're all female, right? They're all female. Every pot, if you're going to grow pot that's worth a damn, it's a feminine. It's been feminized. It's a seed that's been feminized by somebody. I don't know how they feminize a seed to make it only grow females. But that's what they do. But a lot of strains are prone to hermaphrodite, to grow bananas or nanners or, you know, just dicks, chicks with dicks. It's very interesting, the whole thing. But getting back to proper attire, walking through the rainforest, mountaineering, it's all about the proper footwear, you know? Unless Adam Carolla, sorry, I digress even further. Adam Carolla had a theory that, like, you were extra special badass if you, like, whipped somebody's ass in the wrong shoes. So you have to kind of go either way. You have to either go be totally prepared with your footwear when you're walking through a trail, like waterproof boots or something, or be a badass and, like, whip some dude in a fight or in one-on-one basketball in flip-flops or something like that. You know, kind of footwear is very important, I guess. The shoe makes the man. I've never cared too much about footwear, to be honest. What am I wearing now? Brooks. I think they're called Brooks. Is Brooks a brand of shoes? Yeah, Brooks. And my mom bought them for me, you know? And I'm not shameful about that. I was in St. Augustine. She's like, "Jesse, those shoes look like shit. You want me to buy you a pair of shoes?" And, you know, a couple things. Never turned on a free meal. Never turned on a free pair of shoes. And when somebody asks you if you're a god, you always say yes. Thanks, Ray. So where was I? Proper footwear, rainforest, Seattle, melting greenery, acid. One time we ran into a whole group of elk. I didn't know what it was. I called them rain camels. We were still tripping. We hadn't slept all night, but we wanted to get out of the rainforest. I just wanted some civilization. I wanted some coffee. I don't even know if Wi-Fi was happening back then, but I wanted out. I wanted concrete. I wanted coffee. I wanted a clean situation. I didn't want to be tripping. I didn't want to be eating these shitty bananas and this shitty lentil soup that Perry brought, although it was very tasty in the moment. And as we were leaving the rainforest, Queets, that was my place. It was called Queets National Rainforest. If you're ever up there, it's north of Aberdeen. Aberdeen's where Nirvana and the Melvins were from, about an hour west of Olympia, which is about an hour south of Seattle. So it's about 2.5 hours from Seattle, maybe. Queets National Rainforest. It's super cool. As we were leaving Queets National Rainforest, a trickling of elk, one elk, then two elk, and before you know it, they were just walking through the forest like they weren't stamping, like a super slow stampede of bulls. And there was no path, there was no roadway. They were just walking through the forest, like 50, 60 elk. And we had to stop for them. And they kind of stopped a couple times and looked at us. And we just said, what the fuck is that? And it was I called it a rain camel because they looked like camels to me. I don't remember exactly, but they must have had a hump on their back, you know? And that's where the camel part, and they were in the rainforest. So later I deduced they must be elk because rain camel's not actually a thing. But it was brilliant. And that was right before we left the rainforest. I don't remember anything after that. What a great closing to a great trip in the rainforest. Oh, one thing I didn't mention is the night before we had seen an eclipse. It was Easter Sunday and I saw a comet. I was looking up in the sky, in the black sky, and I just, one of those things where I was looking for the comet, because I knew it was there. I think it was Haley Bopp comet, and all of a sudden, I did, you know, it's one of those things where you're actually looking at it, and you don't realize, and it slowly dawns on you, like, oh, shit, okay. What it looked like to me, if you've ever seen a comet, it looked like, do you ever get a magnifying glass as a child? I mean, do kids still do that? I think it's all about screen time now, but at a time, some of your entertainment, you might get a brown leaf and a magnifying glass and you would hold it there and you would concentrate the power of the sun and it would spark a hole. It would burn a hole through the leaf. And that's exactly what the comet looked like. Haley Bopp. Was it Haley Bopp? Hale Bopp? Not Haley's comet, of course. I tried to look at that when I was about 11 years old, and I didn't see it, unfortunately. I remember being very pissed off, because you have to wait 76 years, but, you know, such is life. But that's what it looked like. It looked like a little tiny pinprick of light, and then a smoke. I could see the smoke coming off it, and I was like, holy shit, that's the comet. Like, it was crazy. It didn't look real, but I knew that's what it was. Anyway, how's everybody doing? Do you guys follow me there? I'm really trying to be like Kanye West now. I don't know. Maybe he was trying to be like me. He's not actually. But it's a way certain people's minds work. And it might be called, you know, being scattered or being impressionistic, which is what I like to call it. Nonlinear, prone to tangents. I don't know. Like, that's what I'm doing. That's what I've enjoyed doing. I call it a personality-driven podcast. And I try to be impressionistic. I try to be eccentric and ride that line between, you know, sanity, insanity, anity and inanity, inane. But Kanye West is kind of blowing my mind. I know he's blowing a lot of people's minds in two different ways, depending on which side of the political spectrum you're on. But I will say this. I think it's actually, I don't know, I could be overstating it. I'm hoping, I guess, I'm hoping that it kind of unifies a lot of people, the way Kanye West is embracing the unembraceable, you know, which is like Donald Trump, basically. And he's normalizing Donald Trump in a sense. And I think that's really important because I think there's much, much too much fear-mongering happening. And I kind of feel like the Democrats are really showing their ass right now. I mean, Donald Trump is crude. You know, he's like a bull in a china shop, but he's certainly not a horrible person that I don't think he's horrible for America. I think there's a lot of propaganda and it gets people whipped up and it fucks people up and it causes violence and all this shit. And it always has, right? And I think it's from the dirtiest place imaginable. And that place is to get power back. I think if the Republicans had gotten their asses kicked by the Democrats 2 years ago, you'd see Republicans just fucking out, totally outraged, right, about something. I don't think they'd quite resort to anarchy and violence and the rhetoric that the Democrats have resorted to. It seems a little heavy-handed, to be honest. Have you guys seen Portland? Antifa has, well, I don't know. I don't know. Have they taken over Portland? Is it propaganda? Am I buying into the propaganda that Antifa has ravaged Portland and the mayor is standing down? I very well could have. But what you're seeing is Democrats doing and saying anything to get back into power in the midterms, you know? And that's politics, and that's all fair in love and war. Oh, man, I had something. I had a little point there. Yeah. And depending on what side you're on, it's really hard not to fall for mind control, you know? Kanye West had talked about mind control a fair amount, and I've spoken about the exact same things. I mean, I see people and just the impressions that they get from mainstream media who is paid by certain people to keep other people in the press and minimize certain things that would make your opponent look good and maximize the things that would make him look bad, him or her. Oh, it's a horrible state. I mean, Antifa and the Proud Boys were beating the shit out of each other in Portland, I don't know, yesterday? Why? Political ideals, you know? One wants anarchy, the other one is Christian. One is a Trump supporter, and one is, what, a Hillary supporter? I mean, look, I understand being a liberal, but could you ever really rightfully be a Hillary supporter? I mean, you can. Obviously, there's millions of people that are, but after what she did to Bernie, I feel like anybody who's in the Democratic Party who looks, they should disregard, disavow anything Hillary Clinton stands for. I think she brought shame upon the Democratic Party. I mean, she cheated her way in debates. She rigged the election versus Bernie Sanders. And look, I don't know if Bernie Sanders, what he's talking about, you know, democratic socialism or that, what's that, Ocasio-Cortez, what she's talking about. I don't know if that stuff would work in America. Maybe it would. From what I hear, I don't think it would. It seems too expensive, socialism. But at least he seemed honest, right? And at least he had a grassroots appeal, and he was selling out, you know, small stadiums at least, maybe big stadiums in Seattle like Safeco Field. But Hillary has brought shame upon the Democratic Party. Why did they pick her over Bernie? I don't know. Was she running the show? I think she was to an extent. Did they have to have? I mean, Bernie is a white male, and obviously that's the least important of all people as far as the Democrats go, right? You want to get a female and possibly a black female and possibly a gay black female, you know, whoever you want to get. But you know what I mean? Like, they opted for a woman, and I think that was a mistake, and not because she's a woman. I'm sure there's many wonderful women that could do that job well. I really believe that. But she was deeply flawed. She couldn't talk very well, and the emails, man. What about the emails? And people talk about the emails, and the emails were actually important, and it wasn't so much who hacked the emails. It doesn't matter who hacked the emails, but it was the truth that was inside those emails that actually exposed, and that actually lost her the election. That's important to remember. And why am I going on about Hillary? I don't know. I'm going to shut the fuck up right now. But there's mind control happening, evidently, because people seem like they're living by different blueprints. It's like we're living in two separate realities. And the only thing I can think of is Well, the Democrats are trying to get back into power. And so they're super pissed off. And until they get power, like Hillary Clinton said, we will only have civility when we are back in power, basically. Come on. Are you guys serious? Anybody listening out there, can you really say that everything the Democratic Party is doing right now is just, is good for the country? I don't think so. I don't think so. Anyway, I'll shut the fuck up about politics, but you can't turn away. You know, it's the craziest, greatest soap opera. And man, are they dividing us, or are we divided, or what's dividing us? I can't look away, bottom line. But I'm going to get off the subject right now. I want to tell you guys just a little bit about the beauty of Chef Boyardee. I don't know about all Chef Boyardee, but I mean specifically the little raviolis and the spaghetti and the alphabet soup and the... It's not soup, is it? Well, you guys feel me. Like, it's meat, it's sauce, and it's dough. And they crank it out in like 6 different shapes. And I eat it for lunch. Maybe that's why I'm feeling so shitty. But either way, like, it's a beautiful thing. I mean, how much money have they made off Chef Boyardee? How many products can you make from the same 3 ingredients? Sauce, dough, beef. Sauce, dough, beef. Sauce, dough, beef. I was thinking about that, how brilliant it was. I also had another invention, and it's, you know, I was blown away by this invention I saw not too long ago. When I started working for the hemp people, when I started growing medical cannabis. So they made this device that you hammer, like, so there's a 5-gallon bucket, right, or a 9-gallon bucket, however big they are. They come in different sizes, but it's standard buckets that are used across you know, construction work, and you know, people, they're all over workmen's, you know, people use them all the time. And somebody came up with this device. It's called a gamma lock or something, and I just love this type of thing. It's so practical, and I know whoever made it, kind of like pop sockets for phones. We'll get into that in a few minutes. But I know whoever made it is a millionaire, right? So it's called a gamma lock, and you get a hammer, and you bash these rings on the top of a 5-gallon bucket, and then there's a piece that screws into that, and you have an airtight seal. So you take something that everybody has that, you know, that you can get alternately, and you've added to that, right? And you've added something that you can store anything in, food, marijuana, anything that needs to be airtight and sealed, they're perfectly sealed, and I love that. And you just did the little addition, and pop sockets are a similar thing. Pop sockets are those little silver dollar shaped, size shaped things on the back of your phone that are kind of neat. I used to work for those guys, and I used to make those. I manufactured like thousands of those, tens of thousands of those things over the course of about 4 or 5 months in Seattle. And I remember thinking, there's no way these things are going to catch on. These are so stupid. They cost about half a penny to make. They're charging $15 for them. But I came over here to the East Coast, and everybody has them on their phone. They're selling like hotcakes. And it's such a good invention, man. I would love to invent something like that. I mean, is that the dream? I mean, do any of you care about actually not having to work, you know, and make like week to week, paycheck to paycheck? Is that the dream? Do you even think about that? Is it something you'd like to do? Or does it seem like a pipe dream, you know? The other day I told somebody at work that my entire life has been spent trying, you know, to do something other than working 9 to 5. And she's like, other than having a real job, right? And I said, well, yeah, an invention like that would be amazing. I'm not going to tell you. The last invention I came up with, and I can tell you about this one because it came to pass, and it was basically an addition to a dustpan. I know it sounds silly, but basically you get a dustpan, and it's got wings. It's like a dustpan with wings. You know the dustpans, right? The little ones where you have to reach down with one hand, and the other hand you have to like awkwardly scrape in the dirt, you know, from your sweeper. Well, my idea was a dustpan with like a ring around where the handle is, flat to the floor. So you can just put your foot on that and sweep it right in. You know, so you wouldn't have to bend down. Brilliant, right? I thought so. I told people about it. People talked mad shit. People talked mad shit to me about that invention. But then I saw it 5 years later and I thought, well, shit, there it is. You know, it's a good idea. If I had patented it, maybe I wouldn't have to go, you know, do this 9-to-5 job. I've tried my hand at making music. It's just loss after loss after loss. I mean, I don't feel too bad. It's not very many people make living off inventions or music, but still trying, man. Still trying. Still got those hopes. What do you guys think? Are you guys happy with what you're doing in life? Are you? Do you like your job? Do you think maybe I could do something on the weekends that would give me this freedom, like this big picture scenario where you create something and then you have other people run it and all of a sudden you're just living high on the hog? You know, I know there's a lot of time, a lot of miles between big picture and then other people running it and living high on the hog. But do you guys think about that? Or have you learned to kill that part of you? Is it even in you? Have you learned to kill that part of you? I can't kill that part in me. I can't. I think I'd be better off if I could. Does everybody feel it? I don't know. Like, my brother has 5 kids. He has a job. He's entrenched in it. He has some fun. But one time he said he wished he could have been me or something. Had my life. And I'm like, I just sit around and, like, drink coffee all day, dude. And I don't know. Do you, when you have those kind of jobs, when you have something you can do well and the passion to get that degree, maybe you don't love the job, but do you kill that thing inside you that says you want to be free? I can't kill it. I never could. Some people are like that, but I don't know. I need to ask people. I really do. I was listening to this podcast one time with Henry Rollins, and Henry Rollins and Joe Rogan, and Henry Rollins has just embraced that freedom in a sense. And I guess I don't mean freedom like just freedom to sit around on a couch and do nothing and lounge around. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the freedom to indulge yourself in exactly what you want to do. Exactly what you want to do at all times with zero regard for anybody else. Does everybody feel that way? Or do they put value on other things? I'm sure they do. And I do to an extent sometimes. Maybe it was just being in Seattle for so long and just living for myself. I don't know which came first, you know? But, anyway, Henry Rollins, the only thing he does is listen to music and he writes his books and he tours and that's it. And he sees the world. Sounds like an amazing life, right? He doesn't care for friends. He doesn't care for kids. He doesn't care for anything at all. Except for himself. And he's like apparently a really good friend. He'll help people out. If you need him, he'll be there. He's not like an asshole, but totally selfish existence. Does that sound nice? Or in the end, when you're 75 and you have no kids, but you have a record collection, and no girlfriend, no wife, no grandkids, no dogs, no cats, do you regret it? I guess you just have to be true to what your path is, right? You just have to be true to whatever that is. I think those people who do love family and have family love those family like nothing else, you know? And those people who do exactly what they want to do at all times. Well, that's the key, actually. Sorry. The key is, not the key, but maybe the secret is we are all actually doing exactly. And I don't know where I heard this. Maybe it was in a White Stripes song or something, but it was basically saying that no matter what you do, You're exactly where you're supposed to be, and you're doing exactly what you want to do, one way or the other. I mean, it can't be true, right? I mean, totally. Because certainly some people get into fucked up situations they had no control over. But I don't know. If you're bored, then you're boring, you know? The agony and the irony are killing me. That's a Harvey Danger lyric. I remember when they made it big back in like 2002 with that song Flagpole Sita. The cover of The Rocket had one of those dudes saying, I don't even remember what it said. Rocket's a Seattle magazine. It's now defunct. Anyway, it was a good song. And Sean, the singer of that band, he's a talented fellow. So when I was a child, this is going to be the segment that I call, and I'm going to get some theme music at some point, Ridiculous Things That Happened During My Childhood. And I want to tell you a little bit about something that was silly but meaningful, and it concerned me, my buddy Willie, and Dr. Pepper. We had a club, and it started out, we called it the Pepper Posse. We were about 12 or 13 years old, and I would go over to his house, and he seemed like a renegade. I mean, this guy, he had a jean jacket. I remember that jean jacket, and he'd go like shoplift little things from the 7-Eleven. He just seemed to live free, and it was really inspiring. It was just like a breath of fresh air, his energy. Willie Urquhy was his name. He's not around anymore. He died when I was 19. That wild energy, you know, took him. But it was so wild and so cool. I started staying at his house. You guys know how that is, right? A little bit of taste of freedom, staying at your buddy's house on the weekends. I did that a lot, and it was super fun. And his parents didn't care too much what he did. And my mom was a little overprotective, and we lived in an apartment complex, but he lived downtown. He had this cool house, and his mom had a salon in the back and a pool. He just seemed like Han Solo or something, just a cool kid, redheaded dude, kind of a redheaded chubby buddy of mine. And he was really addicted to Dr. Pepper. I mean, that's all he ever drank. And I went over there, and he just had a brown trash bag. No, a brown grocery bag in his room. And I remember it was just filled with smashed cans of Dr. Pepper. And then he had 2-liter bottles of Dr. Pepper, emptied Dr. Pepper everywhere. Like, his room was filled with Dr. Pepper. That's all he did. He just drank Dr. Pepper all day. And there was a Coke machine just a block away up by some tourist shop. And we would go up there and get Dr. Pepper. And at some point, it just became etched in stone. Like, well, that's all we're going to do. We're just going to drink Dr. Pepper. That's it. We'll have Dr. Pepper. And if we have to, we can drink water. And if you really have to drink soda, you can drink Pepsi, but you couldn't drink Pepsi, only in a pinch. But you were forbidden to drink Coca-Cola. Like, you could not drink it. Any Coke products, because Dr. Pepper, obviously, everybody knows this, it's a Pepsi product. And it was we would sit under this bar called the Milltop in St. Augustine. We would sit under the bar, and basically tourists would have to walk by us up these stairs, and there was this little cubbyhole under like the porch, and we'd sit there and we'd drink Dr. Pepper and eat Cheetos. And to this day, if I drink a Dr. Pepper, which is very rare, and eat Cheetos, it just all floods back to me. The whole memory just floods back to me. Kind of like the one time I had a one night stand in Vancouver Island, Victoria. And long story short, I got a mouthful of breast milk, and it was shocking, it was sensational, and it brought me right back to being 3 years old. It was crazy. No, not three. I wasn't breastfeeding at three, probably like two. I don't know, you'd have to ask my mom, although my grandmother was talking shit to me about 6 months ago with a smile, saying that I had breastfed quite late into life, which might explain why I'm so goddamn soft. I don't know. I hope I didn't. Was I breastfeeding? How old do you have to be to be breastfeeding? I don't know. Sorry, I just got distracted. How old before you can stop breastfeeding, or it's acceptable? I don't know. My brother used to like fill his own bottle, like 4 years old. Baba tea, baba tea. Anyway, I digress all over the place. Tangent. Where was I, guys? Oh, the Dr. Pepper posse. Yeah. So we had a symbol, and the symbol looked like a Pittsburgh Pirates P with a little P under it and a dot, and it was arrows in all directions in the P and a circle around it. And we would say things like, if the Pepper Posse, we would say stupid-ass things like, posse up, posse down, posse all around, hey. And I was just strange. And at one point, this anti-Dr. Pepper Posse gang formed in our apartment complex. And it was kind of a joke, but by the end of it, it wasn't a joke. We actually were, like, fighting, like, warring. Like, five kids versus five kids. We were the Pepper Posse. They were the anti-Pepper Posse. And we were just whipping people's ass. Like, two or three kids cried. I kicked some dude in the face because he was like wouldn't let me up. This guy named Billy Story started crying. I don't even know. Like, it was really ridiculous. And all those shenanigans went on for about a year. I don't know, 13 or 14. So that was something very ridiculous that happened during my childhood. I had a club, a gang formed around Dr. Pepper. It was insane. So if you want the quintessential J-Bo experience, go ahead and get a bag of Cheetos, get some Dr. Pepper, and sit down and chew up a Cheeto or a couple Cheetos. Get your mouth about halfway full of Cheetos and take a drink of Dr. Pepper. The carbonation, the salt, the cheese, the sugar, and swallow. And that's it, man. I'm thinking about it. It sounds really, really fucking, I can just feel a little bit of burn in my throat and the satisfaction. I mean, that sweet and salty thing is unbelievable, right? Yeah, so I want to thank you guys for listening to the Shit Show with J-Bo. We went to all kinds of, well, not that many places today, but a few strange places, I think. Subscribe on iTunes, please. Give us a 5-star review, even if you don't like it. Well, whatever. I know that's not going to happen. If you know me, if you liked it at all, give me a 5-star review because, you know, why would you do a 1-star? Why would you go through that trouble? Go to the Facebook page and hit me up. Say hi. Say anything. Say you hated the show. You feel free to debate me. Hit me with an instant message. Shit Show J-Bo on Facebook. TSS with J-Bo on Podomatic. TSS with J-Bo on iTunes. I started doing this new thing I'm going to start right now where it's like an Easter egg. I'm throwing an Easter egg in here. It's kind of an interactive way. So if you've gotten this far in the podcast, go ahead and leave me a message. And the message needs to be one word. And here's the word you need to leave me on the Facebook page. It's on the very top entry on the Facebook page. Yeah, just somewhere towards the top. It doesn't matter. Leave one word. I want you to leave me John Lennon's middle name. You got to go find out what that middle name is, okay? This is a multi-tiered mystery on how to do this. Now, find John Lennon's middle name and type it on my Facebook page. If I see you, you're the first one who does it, I will send you an autographed copy of my first band in Seattle, because I've got about 400 or 500 left over from when we printed up 1,000. The band was called J. Hiram Boggs and Satisfaction. It's got 5 songs on it. It's an EP. It's super out of print. It's super rare. It's wrapped in plastic, although I'll unwrap it and sign it for you. And the artwork is by a guy named Mangleff. It was kind of an organic psychedelia that the band was. And what I mean by that is at some point, we had a trumpet and a violin. Now, the recording we did doesn't quite sum up what that band had done later, but we did get 5 songs on tape before the band really kicked off. And that band, you know, we played KEXP in Seattle. We got to open up for Modest Mouse. Some things that I hold dear to my heart. I mean, Eric Judy from Modest Mouse played in that band. So I have some really great memories, some really great friends that I still know from that band. Charlie, Tony, John, Jeremy was in that band, Jeremy the drummer, John played drums as well, Charlie played trumpet, Tony played bass, BJ, I can't forget BJ, he played violin, and it was beautiful, man, beautiful, beautiful times. But anyway, if you go to my Facebook page and type the word Winston, sure, I just gave it away, fuck. John Lennon's middle name is Winston. Type the word Winston on my Facebook page. I will send you a signed copy of Crude Stew, the very first EP, and only recording of J. Hiram Boggs and Satisfaction. I want to thank you all for listening. It's been hella cool. Oh shit, we're about 40 minutes, so see you next week. I'm going to get my friend Dirty Dave in here. Actually, not in here. It's going to be political. It's going to be about the midterms. He wants to talk about it. He's a smart motherfucker. This is the Shit Show with J-Bo, and we'll talk soon. Have a great one. See you next week. Bam. Later.